kind of karmic signal from it. When nothing happens, I just pick one that's sticking out a little farther than the others and place it face up on the table to the right of the death card. Ah, the magician! Destiny sounds pleased, which makes me feel better. Is that good? She shrugs. Well, it's another major arcana card and reversed, so it's complicated. Of course it is. Ignoring my defeated tone, she says. But boiled down, it means that what you need to let go of are your illusions. I furrow my brow. Illusions about what? Destiny meets my gaze. There's something very sad in her eyes. Only you can answer that question, sugar. You ask the tarot how you can move on from your husband. My advice to you, based on this reading, is to take a hard look at exactly what you're holding on to. She taps a fingernail on the Ten of Swords. There's a betrayal here. Maybe it's about that. I shake my head. No, that doesn't make sense. Michael never betrayed me. Are you sure? Into my head pops the memory of the time the woman at Michael's holiday work party called him a prick. Sharon or Karen or whatever her name was. The same woman who stood behind me at his funeral and wept. I push the memory aside and say firmly, I'm sure it has to be about something else. Destiny looks at me as if she knows all my secrets and they're really bumming her out. All right, sugar, you know best. Just sit on it for a spell when you leave. Think it over. And in the meantime, I'll pray for you. Why the hell do people keep telling me they'll pray for me? Fiona said the same damn thing. Irritated, I stand. That's when I realize I left my purse in the car. Sorry, but I have to run out to my car to get your money. Destiny stands too, folding her hands at her waist and smiling at me. Oh, there's no charge, sugar. The reading's on me. So now I'm getting the pity discount, same as Eddie the handyman gave me. I must be much worse off than I realize if my face inspires such charity. Thank you. That's very nice of you. I back up, eager to get out of this house. Destiny doesn't offer to walk me to the door. She simply stands there, smiling sadly, making me feel worse than when I walked in. As I'm closing the front door behind me, she calls out, Safe travel, sugar! Somehow, that strikes me as the most ominous thing she said of all. 30. Dear Dante, I hope this letter finds you well. I'm not so well myself. Actually, I think I've blown past unwell and landed squarely in Crazy Town, USA, where I'm currently running for mayor. Have you ever felt like your life is out of control? Like there are unseen forces pulling the strings and you're just a puppet, dancing around helplessly, getting jerked this way and that? That's how I feel. Helpless. Lost in a storm. Also, more than a little pathetic because the only person I can talk to about my problems is someone I've never even met, who is currently incarcerated for reasons unknown to me, who might be a serial killer for all I know. That wasn't a dig, I'm just pointing out facts. Though it's probably better this way. I doubt I could tell someone I know that a fortune teller named Destiny told me I have psychic baggage. My housekeeper is trying to convince me I'm being haunted, and I'm seriously entertaining the idea of having a seance because nothing normal makes sense anymore. Normal went out the window when my husband died. Also, I'm falling in love. It's only happened to me once before, so I'm not much of an expert on the subject. All I know is that I feel incredible when I'm with him and like shit when I'm not. I love making him smile, and I hate making him sad, which, unfortunately, I seem to have a knack for. I'm all messed up, Dante. Do you have any words of wisdom for me? Sincerely, Kayla.
31. Dear Kayla, you asked if I have words of wisdom for you. The answer is yes. Here they are. You are not controlling the storm. And you are not lost in it. You are the storm. I'd love to take credit for that, but it's from a writer by the name of Sam Harris. He was arguing that free will is an illusion, which I'm sure you'll agree is a thoroughly depressing idea. Bypassing the dour philosophical stance, however, I really like the perspective that chaos isn't outside us. is always within, even if we perceive it to be otherwise. You're the chaos. You're the storm. You're the one creating the high winds and choppy seas you have to navigate. You're the source of everything that's happening. In other words, you're the one with the power. The question then becomes, what are you going to do with it? Sam Harris would tell you I completely wrecked his argument and I have no idea what I'm talking about. But we're not listening to him. Listen to yourself, Kayla. Stop and really listen. You're the storm. What is all your thunder and lightning telling you? Dante.
32. I say crossly to the letter in my hand, if I knew what all my thunder and lightning were telling me, I wouldn't have asked you for advice. Maybe Dante was sent to prison for being criminally irritating. With a sigh of frustration, I slap the letter down on my desktop and stare glumly out the window into the rainy afternoon. More damn rain. It's like the weather is in on some evil plot to drive me even nuttier than I already am. It's been 2 weeks since I've had contact with Aiden. Every day that passes is drearier and more depressing than the last. I've developed a severe case of insomnia to go along with all my other problems, and I still haven't found a therapist. The other day when I visited the building where Eddie said Dr. Letterman has his office, there was no Dr. Letterman listed on the directory. I don't know why I went to that pothead Eddie for help anyway. He probably only has a single functioning brain cell left. Not that I'm in any position to judge. I've been drinking so much wine I should buy stock in the grape industry. When I hear the sound of laughter, I lift my head and look toward the window. The laughter comes again, bright and bubbly, though I can't see anyone out in the yard. Curious, I go to the window and peek out. The little blonde boy in the red rain slicker runs across the lawn in front of me. I gasp and fling myself against the wall, flattening my back against it. My heart pounds. Adrenaline floods my veins, leaving me shaking. If anyone had told me before this moment that the sight of a cheerful toddler would strike such terror in my soul, I'd have laughed in their face. The guy in the trench coat doesn't even scare me this much. It's not a ghost. He's too happy to be a ghost. Didn't Fiona say something about spirits trapped in this dimension being sad? Panicked, I argue with myself that I'm being ridiculous, but it doesn't help. Then I have such a horrifying thought, it stops my pounding heart cold. Is that the child I miscarried? Am I being haunted by the spirit of my dead son? I know it doesn't make sense. My child hadn't even been born yet, much less grown to a toddler. But what do I know about ghosts? Maybe they continue to develop into the person they would have been if they'd lived? But where would they get clothing? Did this kid visit some otherworldly kitty store to pick out his little rain jacket and yellow boots? I slap a hand over my eyes and groan. Oh, stop it, Kayla. That is not a ghost. Now go outside and find his mother. The sound of my voice cuts through some of my panic enough to galvanize me into action. I straighten my shoulders, take a deep breath, and turn back to the window. The little blonde boy stands a few feet away, looking right at me. We stare at each other through the glass. My heart feels as if it's about to break my ribcage. It races so fast I can't catch my breath. Why is he so scary? The boy points at me. He lets out a high, blood-curdling shriek. His mouth stretched open and his blue eyes wide in terror. Then he turns and bolts, disappearing from sight. I stand rooted to the spot, hyperventilating until anger overtakes me. I shout at the window, "Fuck you too, kid!" Immediately, I slap a hand over my mouth. I can't be that lady who hollers at children on her lawn. We had one of those on our block when I was growing up and everyone hated her. I run through the house to the back door. Barging through that, I launch myself off the porch and look around the yard. There's no sign of the boy. I run left and look around the side of the house, but he's not there either. So I head in the other direction, my breath steaming out in a white cloud in the cold air. There's no sign of him on either side of the house. He's not in the front yard when I search it. He's not hiding in the bushes or running down the street. He vanished into thin air. Standing wet and shaking in the driveway, I sense a presence behind me. When I whirl around, I'm alone. Then I happen to glance up at the second floor. In the window of my master bedroom, The little blonde boy stands staring down at me. There are no such thing as ghosts. There are no such thing as ghosts. There are no such thing as ghosts. Rain pelting my upturned face, I shout, "Stay there!" He backs away from the window and disappears from view. Gnashing my teeth, I run back inside the house, take the stairs to the second floor, two at a time, and storm into the master bedroom. It's empty. I search everywhere, every nook and corner of the house, but that little son of a nutcracker is gone. When I review the camera feed, it shows nothing but static. Deeply shaken by the encounter, I go around the house obsessively checking locks, drawing drapes closed, and generally acting as paranoid as I feel. I assume the boy came in through the back door after I went through it, but I can't come up with an explanation for how he got out. I should have run right into him coming down the staircase, but didn't. He literally vanished into thin air. I'd call Jake and ask him to install more cameras on the inside of the house, but considering how badly our last meeting went, I doubt that's such a good idea. So I pour myself a vat of wine, lock myself into the bathroom, and draw a bath. Hunkering low in the bubbles, I hold on to the overfilled wine glass with shaking hands and try to pinpoint exactly when it was that I began losing my mind. Because I can no longer convince myself I have a firm grip on reality. If I'm seriously considering that the ghost of a 5-year-old kid is haunting me, I've lost it. When the lights above the vanity flicker 3 times, I stifle a sob and guzzle the wine, needing Aiden with an ache that feels terminal. That night, I dream that I'm drowning. It's vivid and horrifying. I wake up sweating with a scream stuck in my throat. For the next 3 nights, I have the same dream. By Saturday morning, I'm a wreck. I haven't been able to work at all. Every little creak of the house scares the bejesus out of me. The burning smell when I run the dryer changes to a stench of something putrid like sewage. Only in my heightened nervous state, it smells like rotting flesh. When I investigate, I can't find the source of it. If I turn on the television, it turns itself off. Every gust of wind outside sends a cold draft through the house, making the curtains rustle and whisper. At least I think that's what's making that whispering sound. But I'm too scared to go look. I'm so jumpy and strung out, I scream when a fly lands on my arm. Desperate for contact, I send Aiden a text. "I miss you." He doesn't respond for so long, I think he won't at all. But then his text comes through with a little chime that has my heart leaping into my throat.
"I miss you too."
He sends a white rabbit emoji along with it. For some strange reason, that brings tears to my eyes. "Can I come over?" This time, his response is instant.
"You still wearing that ring?"
"No."
"Did you take it off right before you answered me?"
Shit. Why does the man have to be so insufferably intelligent? "Please, Aiden, I need to see you. Please."
"Sorry, bunny."
I stare at the screen, biting my lips. He doesn't sound very sorry. Maybe I need to sweeten the offer. "May I please come over? Master." My phone remains silent. I wonder if I should send him a snap of my booty or boobs, but the thought of taking a series of unflattering nude pictures and desperate search for one good enough to entice a man into allowing me to run to see him leaves me even more depressed than I was before. How did I get to this point in my life? What the hell has happened to me? When the doorbell rings and I find the step empty when I open the front door, I decide the only logical thing left to do is get drunk. If I'm going insane, there's no reason to do it sober.
"Kayla? Kayla, dear, can you hear me?"
I open my eyes to find Fiona bending over me with a concerned expression on her face. It's morning, apparently, Monday morning, and I'm lying on my back on the living room sofa with a splitting headache and a mouth that tastes like ashes.
"Hi," she says, chuckling. "You look a sight. Had a wee bender over the weekend, did you, dear?"
"It was more than wee." I sit up. The room tilts and my stomach lurches along with it. I cover my mouth with a hand and produce a loud, unladylike burp.
"Everything all right?"
"Oh, yes, everything is splendiferous. Absolutely top-notch." She purses her lips and gives me a disapproving look.
"I must say, sarcasm is very unbecoming on you." you'll have to cut me some slack. I recently realized my brain has gone missing. Even worse, I realized it's probably been gone for quite a while. There's not a thing wrong with your brain, my dear. Now get off that sofa and pull yourself together. I don't like seeing you moping about. I'm not moping, I mutter, knowing that's exactly what I'm doing. When Fiona turns to walk away, I say, would it be okay if I asked you for some personal advice? Surprised, she turns back to me. Of course. What is it? I exhale and drag my hands through my hair. Leaning over, I prop my forearms on my thighs and stare at the carpet while I gather my thoughts. When someone says they're giving you space, but you don't want the space they're trying to give, how do you handle that? You mean they've closed a door, but you want it to open? I nod, liking that imagery. When I glance up to meet her gaze, hers is soft and sympathetic. She says gently, my dear girl, you knock. Just then the doorbell rings. Fiona smiles. Or you ring the bell. I'll get it. When she turns and walks away, I call after her. There won't be anybody there. One never knows, she says, chuckling as if she's enjoying some private joke. She leaves the room. A few moments later, she returns, shaking her head. Well, you were right. There was nobody there. She pauses, staring at me meaningfully. That I could see, anyway. I groan and drop my head into my hands. Okay, you win. We'll do the seance. The doorbell rings again. The television turns itself on. Volume thunderous. From the hallway comes the distinct pop of a light bulb exploding in one of the fixtures. Fiona says somberly, I think that's a very good idea. 33. Dear Dante, thank you for the advice. I must say, however, it was shitty. You are the storm. What are your thunder and lightning telling you? Was that really supposed to be helpful? Because it wasn't. Please forgive the rudeness, but my life is falling apart. Correction. It already fell apart. I'm just wandering around in all the broken pieces, kicking up dust and cutting my feet on shards of glass. And, by the way, what was that whole thing about the love that turned the stars and the wheels? That was confusing as hell. As a matter of fact, all of your letters have been confusing. I still don't know what you want from me or why you decided we should be pen pals or how you even found me in the first place. I hardly know what's real and what isn't anymore. I don't even know if these letters are real. Maybe I'm staring at the wall in my locked room in a mental institution, conjuring all this up in my head. That's what it feels like anyway. I feel like I let go of the rope that tied me to a dock and now I'm drifting alone, far out at sea in a leaking raft that's being circled by hungry sharks. And the wind is picking up. And it's starting to rain. I'm drowning, Dante. I'm drowning. What I really need right now is a life jacket. Kayla. 34. Fiona informs me that the full moon is tomorrow night so we can conduct the seance right away. She tells me I'm lucky we can get it done so quickly. I don't feel lucky. I feel cursed. I don't say that aloud, however, because I don't want to tempt fate into proving it. I spend the rest of that day and the next in a state of high anxiety, every so often glancing at my left hand. I'm surprised each time to find my wedding band still there on my ring finger. Aiden was correct when he guessed that I'd taken it off right before I answered his text. I won't lie to him again, so I had to get creative. But I put it back on when he didn't answer me, and I still can't figure out why. Though I'd never admit it to him, something felt wrong when I took off that ring. It felt as if the house itself sucked in a breath of horror, which is obviously a figment of my overwrought imagination, but that's how it felt. At some point over the past few months, the house has become more than simply a collection of rooms under a leaky roof. It's taken on a presence I can physically feel. This house has a pulse, and its dark heart beats for me. I think it wants something. I think it's trying to send me a message. Another blue jay committed suicide on my office window. It felt symbolic, so I looked up the meaning of a dead blue jay online. Yes, I'm now so desperate I'm hitting up the internet for help. Anyway, it turns out those particular birds have strong spiritual associations and were often considered by Native Americans to be messengers from the gods. Seeing one is supposed to bring good luck. Unless it's dead, in which case it means that you're running away from your problems. If only I could run faster.
Hello, Kayla. It's lovely to meet you. I'm Claire.
I stand in the open doorway looking at Fiona's sister and thinking I must be seeing double. They look exactly alike, right down to the dimples in their cheeks. Same short gray hair, same bright blue eyes, same stout legs and cheerful smile. They're so similar, it's eerie. If Fiona was sick one day and sent Claire to clean the house in her place, I'd never know it. The only difference is that Claire is carrying a black duffel bag and Fiona has an umbrella. Nice to meet you two. Please come in. I stand aside to let the pair enter the foyer, then shut the door against the blustery evening. You didn't tell me you had a twin, Fiona. She drops her dripping umbrella into the stand next to the console table and smiles.
We're not twins.
You could have fooled me. Claire pats her hair.
Don't be ridiculous. I'm much prettier than she is.
They share a fond glance, then remove their matching blue wool overcoats in moves that look synchronized. While Fiona takes both coats and hangs them in the hall closet, Claire turns to me and looks me curiously up and down. What? I ask nervously, wondering if I have stains on my shirt or spinach in my teeth. Her smile is kind.
Fiona has told me so much about you. I already feel as if we're old friends.
Oh, well, I could use a few friends right now, to be honest. My life is pretty chaotic. She chuckles.
Don't worry, my dear. You're in good hands. I've been communicating with spirits since I was 4 years old, so we'll see what this one wants and have her on her way in no time.
Bypassing my shock that this poor woman has been carrying on conversations with dead people her entire life, I say, great, except the spirits haunting me are male. My laugh is nervous. I can't believe I just said that.
Ah, yes, excuse me. I have two other seances to perform tonight and the details get mixed up.
Two? I repeat, astonished. She gestures toward the ceiling.
The full moon is a very busy time for me. And forget about the solstices and the equinoxes. I'm booked a year in advance for those.
When she sees my expression, she explains.
Experienced mediums are in high demand. You wouldn't believe the amount of people who die and refuse to move on to the other side.
I don't know how to respond to that, but I feel as if it deserves a polite reply, even if it is nuts.
I'm glad to hear business is booming.
Fiona returns and asks Claire,
would you like to do a sweep of the house before we begin to see if you sense anything?
Claire shakes her head.
That won't be necessary. I'm getting very strong energy already.
She points toward the hallway.
What's down there?
My office and my husband's. She and Fiona share a meaningful look. You guys can't go all twinny telepathic on me. I'm freaked out enough already. What was that look for? Claire says,
I don't want to alarm you, dear, but...
She hesitates, making a face as if she needs to run post-haste to the nearest toilet. Sweet baby Jesus, if this gets any worse, I'll climb up to the roof and throw myself off. Go on.
I think we should conduct the seance in your husband's office.
A distant boom of thunder rattles the windows. Of course it would happen right then, because even the goddamn weather wants to see me go crazy. Why? She and Fiona share that weird look again.
Because I sense that's where the spirit wants to have it.
We stare at each other. Nobody says anything for a while. Then I say, Claire, I'm going to ask you something now, and I want you to be completely honest with me.
Yes?
Is this bullshit?
Oh, no, my dear.
She says vehemently, shaking her head.
I assure you, this is the farthest thing from bullshit.
As more evidence of my crumbling grip on reality, I spend a moment debating with myself about the difference between the words furthest and farthest. Then I sigh and give up. Fine, we'll do the seance in Michael's office, but if the ghost of Christmas past shows up, I can't be held responsible if I crack and bludgeon it with the nearest heavy object. Let's get this over with. I turn and walk down the hall, listening to their footsteps behind me, and wondering if it would be poor spiritual etiquette to drink wine during a seance. I have a feeling I'm going to need booze before this is done. I open the door to the office and switch on the lights. Stepping aside to let Fiona and Claire pass, I notice how cold it is in the room. It feels like a walk-in freezer. Shivering, I say, sorry about the temperature.
Ignoring me, Claire wanders around, looking things over as Fiona and I watch. She sets her bag down on an occasional chair and points to the round table next to it.
Can we move this into the middle of the room?
What do we need that for?
A round table is most conducive.
I don't bother asking conducive to what, because we've officially arrived in Looneyville, when in Rome and all that. While Fiona and I move the table, Claire unpacks her duffel bag. From it, she takes a black cloth and shakes it out, murmuring something over it. I have to assume spells. She drapes it over the table, adjusting it so it's even to the floor all the way around, then goes back to the bag and removes three white candles, which she sets in the center of the table. Next is a small bowl of unwrapped chocolates that she places beside the candles. What's the chocolate for?
A food offering for the spirit,
Claire replies as if it's obvious. I can't resist countering this nonsense with a little logic. How's it going to eat if it doesn't have a real mouth?
Ah, but the spirit doesn't know it doesn't have a real mouth now, does it?
When I look at Fiona, she shrugs.
A little suspension of disbelief wouldn't hurt you, dear.
I mutter, a little gallon of Cabernet wouldn't hurt me either.
No eating or drinking during the seance,
reprimands Claire, lighting the candles. She sends me a stern look over the rims of her glasses.
And no jewelry either. That will have to come off.
She jerks her chin toward my wedding ring.
Along with anything else you might be wearing. Also, switch off any electronic devices, please. Fiona, will you dim the lights?
I'm expecting Fiona to shut off the main overhead light and leave the lamps on, but she kills both, plunging the room into darkness, broken only by the wavering glow of the candles on the table. The distant boom of thunder rolls through the sky again, louder this time. A sudden gust of wind howls through the trees outside. Rain patters against the windows, sliding down like silvery tears. If Claire was going for a spooky vibe, she couldn't have picked a better night for it.
Everyone pull up a chair,
she says, setting a pad of paper and pencil on the table. I roll Michael's desk chair over and sit. Fiona drags a side chair from one corner of the room and takes her place to my left. Claire pushes the occasional chair over, removes her duffel bag from the seat, and sets it on the floor. Then she settles herself in the chair and looks at me.
Dear?
Yes?
You need to take off your ring.
Oh, right. Sorry. I slip the ring off my finger and shove it back into the back pocket of my jeans. Claire looks dissatisfied.
It can't be on your body. Perhaps you could put it on the desk.
I don't know why it should be such a big deal, but I don't want to wreck the possibility of finding out what the ghost who doesn't exist and isn't haunting me wants, so I take my wedding ring from my pocket and put it on Michael's desk blotter, right next to the folded newspaper with the article about his death. His face stares up at me in black and white from beneath that terrible headline. Local man drowns. My heart palpitating, I carefully move the ring to his picture. Then I nudge it over until it's resting atop his face. I don't know why, but it feels right. As I back up, it seems as if one of his eyes peers out from the circle of gold, following my every move. Unnerved, I return to the table and take my seat. I wipe my sweating palms on my jeans and try to shake off the gathering sense of foreboding.
Everyone, place your hands flat on the table in front of you, please.
Fiona and I follow Claire's instructions. Then she does the same, looking at each of us in turn, her demeanor somber and her voice low.
Before we begin, a word of warning. Spirits are unpredictable. Whatever happens, keep your composure, remain silent. Don't break the circle of energy by standing up. I'll start by stating our intent to make contact and inviting the spirit to join us at the table. If the spirit accepts our invitation, you may hear strange noises such as knocking or taps. I'll ask the spirit yes or no questions to begin, and if they prove amenable, I'll ask them what they want. They might communicate through me, using my hand to draw on this pad, or my voice to speak directly to you.
Oh, fuck. If I witness a dead guy speak through this nice old woman, I'll never be right in the head again. Frightened now, I swallow and press my hands more firmly against the tabletop to try to get them to stop shaking. It doesn't work.
When the seance is over and you have no questions left, I'll thank the spirit for coming. Then we can turn on the lights and discuss what happened. Are you ready, Kayla?
I nod, though I don't feel ready at all.
Then let us begin.
Claire closes her eyes. With her face tilted toward the ceiling, she says in a hushed voice,
"We gather tonight under the full moon to seek guidance from the spirit world. We welcome any spirits nearby to join our circle. Please, make your presence known."
The following silent pause is the longest of my entire existence. It might only last 60 seconds, but it seems like lifetimes. My pulse accelerates. My breathing turns shallow. My teeth start to chatter. I feel lightheaded, queasy, and impossibly cold. When nothing happens, Claire repeats,
"We welcome any spirits nearby to join our circle. Please make your presence known. Are you with us? Give us a sign."
Michael's framed college diploma slides off the wall and lands with a clatter on the floor. I gasp. All the hair on my arms stand on end. I sit frozen, my back ramrod straight and my eyes wide and unblinking. My pounding heart is the only muscle in my body able to move.
"Remain calm,"
says Claire quietly, her eyes still closed. Calm? I am not. Calm I might never be again. Calm is for people on lovely beach vacations with their toes in the sand and a daiquiri in hand, not for people in imminent danger of having proof that their dead husband is reaching out from beyond the grave. I am so not calm, I'm about to fucking explode. A clap of thunder makes me jump in my seat. It's followed by a crackle of lightning that burns white fire through the black night sky. The room is briefly illuminated in theatrical brightness, then plunged into disorienting darkness again like a carnival funhouse meant to terrorize kids on Halloween.
"Spirits," says Claire. "Thank you for joining us. Are there more than one of you? Please knock on the table to answer. Once for a yes, and twice for a no."
The wind outside increases. The temperature in the room drops another few degrees. Rain batters the window panes with a sound like hail. And my heart. Jesus, God, my poor fucking heart is screaming bloody murder. Because through the room echoes the unmistakable sound of two loud knocks.
"One of you then," murmurs Claire. "Welcome, spirit. We're honored by your presence."
Her voice has slowed, along with her breathing. She appears to be going into some kind of a trance. Whatever the opposite of a trance is, that's what's happening to me. I'm about to piss myself. Nerves I never knew I had have woken up and started shrieking. I might puke. "Michael?" I whisper, my entire body shaking as I look wildly around the room. "Michael, are you here?" Nothing happens. There are no knocks on the table. No pictures fall off the walls. Claire says,
"Spirit, do you know any of the people in this room?"
Knock.
"Did you know them when you were alive?"
Knock.
"Is it me?"
Knock. Knock.
"Is it Fiona?"
Knock. Knock.
"Is it Kayla?"
The answering single knock is so forceful, I flinch and whimper.
"Do you have a message you want to pass along?"
Knock. The sound of my labored breathing is even louder than the wind. By now, I'm shivering uncontrollably. Claire reaches out with her eyes closed, blindly hunting for the pad of paper on the tabletop beside her. She grasps it, finds the pencil, and whispers,
"Tell us, spirit, what is the message?"
Gripping the pencil so hard her knuckles are white, Claire's hand hovers over the blank page of the pad. Fiona sits across from me with her eyes closed and her hands flattened on the table. I think if I closed my eyes now, I'd die instantly from a heart attack. I'm so scared, I'm on the verge of bursting into tears.
"Spirit, what is your message?"
Seconds turn into minutes. The storm rages outside. The three of us sit silently at the table in wavering candlelight, waiting for a response that never comes. After a long time where nothing happens, Claire says,
"Let me rephrase the question. Spirit, what do you want?"
Her hand holding the pencil tenses. Then it twitches. Then it begins to tremble uncontrollably. I watch in fascinated horror as Claire's forearm starts to move, jerking back and forth over the paper in short bursts.
Abruptly, her arm freezes. She presses the pencil to the paper and writes a word in one fast scrawl from start to finish. The word is composed of heavy block letters all in caps, scratched so deeply into the paper, in some places, it's torn through to the page beneath. Revenge. A sudden freezing draft snuffs out the burning candles. Something cold brushes against my cheek, like a ghostly wind or ghostly fingers. I scream at the top of my lungs and run from the room. 35. Fiona and Claire find me in the kitchen, huddled on the floor in a corner with my back against the cabinets and my knees drawn up to my chin. Glancing around, Claire asks,
"Why did you open all the cabinets and drawers?"
"They were open when I got here." My laugh sounds unhinged. "The resident ghost thinks it's hilarious to do stuff like that." The sisters look at each other, then at me. Claire suggests gently,
"Why don't we all sit at the table and have a chat?"
"A chat sounds great. So does an exorcism."
"There's a fucking ghost in my house?"
Fiona says,
"Yes, but look on the bright side. At least there's only one."
I groan and drop my forehead to my knees.
Now, my dear, don't despair. This is actually quite good news."
"Remind me where in this unmitigated supernatural disaster good news can be found," she says brightly.
"Now we know what the spirit wants."
I look up and stare at her in disbelief. From the sound of it, the spirit wants to commit murder. As I'm the only person who lives here, I'm thinking I'm the prime candidate for its homicidal quest.
"The spirit is angry, but I sense the anger isn't directed at you," says Claire,
pulling up a chair at the kitchen table. She sits, patting her hair and smoothing a hand on the front of her blouse. She looks exhausted. Being possessed by a dead person must really take the wind out of you.
"But it knows me. What does that mean?" "You're the owner of the home. You've been living here with it. Of course it knows you."
I'm horrified all over again. "Oh, God. Has it been watching me when I'm in the shower?" Fiona says,
"I think you're missing the bigger picture here, dear."
Exasperated, I demand,
"Which is?"
She pulls up a chair next to her sister and sits down. Folding her hands in her lap and looking at me with kindness in her eyes, she says,
"If you can help the spirit get what it wants, it will move on."
I glance at Claire, who nods.
"You're saying you want me to be an accessory to murder?" "The spirit said nothing about murder. It said revenge, which can take all sorts of forms."
I drop my forehead to my knees again and say miserably,
"I can't believe this is happening."
Ever the practical one, Fiona says,
"We need to contact the spirit again."
I lift my head and insist,
"There's no way I'm doing another seance."
Claire shrugs.
"Suit yourself."
Growing more desperate, I demand,
"So that's it? We're out of options? Can't you just burn some sage or something to make it go away?"
Claire laughs as if I'm being silly.
"Oh, my dear, that's a myth. A spirit isn't a pesky insect one can banish with a little perfumed smoke."
"Great. So I have to sell the place if I ever want peace again?"
"Unless it's not the house your spirit is haunting."
"What do you mean?"
"Perhaps the spirit is haunting you. In which case, it doesn't matter where you live. It will always find you."
I stare at her with my mouth hanging open. She shrugs again as if she hasn't just delivered the worst news yet. Then something hits me. Holy shit, maybe it's one of my parents. God, I never considered that. Claire and Fiona share another one of their odd looks. Feeling defensive, I say,
"There was no answer when I asked if it was Michael, so I have to assume it wasn't him, right?"
There's something strange in Claire's pause, as if she's carefully choosing her words.
"We can't assume anything. How long have your parents been dead?"
"Many years, both of them."
"Then it's not them."
"How do you know?"
"You would have been contacted before now. Spirits can't cross to the other side then return to this dimension. Once they ascend beyond, this plane of existence is closed to them. The only spirits who can make contact are lingering in limbo. Now come sit at the table. My legs are getting cramped just looking at you huddled on the floor."
Though my legs are shaky, I manage to stand. I join them, sitting across from Fiona and propping my elbows on the table. I drop my head into my hands and sigh. After a moment, Claire says gently,
"Kayla, Please look at me.
I lift my head and meet her gaze.
I want to help you. We both do.
She glances at Fiona, who nods.
So if you won't do another seance, here's my suggestion for what you should do.
When she pauses, I say,
I'm listening. Research the history of this house. Find out who lived here before you did. Perhaps you'll find a clue about the identity of this ghost. If it isn't someone you know, it's someone who lived here before.
That makes sense. Except you're forgetting that during the seance, the spirit said it knew me while it was alive. She waves a hand dismissively in the air.
I wouldn't take that as canon. Usually they're very confused.
When I only stare at her, she explains herself.
Ghosts are a little bit like people with psychiatric disorders. They cannot distinguish illusion from reality. When a soul is trapped here, it needs a guide. A spirit guide, if you will, to help lead it to the light.
Wait, now you want me to be a ghost guide? She quirks a brow.
Do you prefer to be haunted for the rest of your life?
I look at Fiona for help. She only shrugs. It's either that or we go back in the office and try again. No way. It touched me. I shudder in disgust. God, how am I supposed to sleep here now knowing there's a freaking ghost floating around?
It's been floating around for quite some time, dear.
Is that supposed to make me feel better? She chuckles.
Well, it hasn't molested you yet, if that's what you're worried about.
Horrified, I gape at her.
Yet? No one is molesting anyone,
interrupts Claire, irritated.
The spirit doesn't want to fondle you. It wants you to help it get revenge.
On who? For what?
Do some research and find out.
I glare at her. She says,
or we go back in that office right now and put the matter to rest.
She looks at her watch.
Either way, I'm already running behind schedule. What's it to be?
If I can help it, I'm never going in that room again.
Well, that's it then. If you change your mind, give me a call.
She stands. Fiona rises with her. I can't let them leave without thanking them, so I rise and follow Claire into the foyer as Fiona retrieves their coats from the hall closet. Claire's duffel bag of seance supplies is already sitting next to the door, packed up and ready to go. They must have gathered the things while I was huddled on the kitchen floor in psychic distress. When Fiona returns, I say,
thank you for your time, Claire. I appreciate it. It's my pleasure, dear.
You too, Fiona.
Be well, Kayla. I'll see you next Monday.
Right. Unless I'm murdered by a vengeful spirit before then. She smiles at me, which is in no way helpful. I open the door for them. Claire is about to cross the threshold, but she stops short. Fiona and I follow her confused gaze. Lying on the doormat is a bright orange neoprene vest with four black straps sewn across the chest. Plastic buckles dangle at the end of the straps. In the porch light, the reflective patches on the shoulders of the vest are dazzling. Fiona says, what on earth is that?
A life jacket,
I whisper, starting to shake again. A visibly confused Claire says,
what is it doing on your porch?
I asked my pen pal for it. They look at me and repeat in unison,
pen pal?
Yeah. Gripping the doorframe for support, I laugh breathlessly. Fiona asks,
why is that funny?
Because I think I figured out who's haunting me. 10 minutes later, the three of us are back at the kitchen table looking through Dante's letters that I brought down from my underwear drawer upstairs. Claire called her other two clients to cancel because my haunting just became too juicy for her to pass up. Apparently, it's not every day that a ghost delivers mail and a personal flotation device from beyond the grave.
Remarkable,
says Claire, bent over the table as she peers closely at one of the first letters I received. Careful not to touch the paper, she points at the lower right corner.
That looks like it could be blood.
That's what I thought too, but how could a ghost bleed?
It can't.
She glances up at me.
But it could be someone else's blood.
Or something else's, chimes in Fiona. An animal, perhaps.
I grimace. That's sick. Why the hell would he send a letter smeared with animal blood? Claire says,
maybe it's a clue.
The three of us look at the rust-colored smudge. Outside, the storm continues to batter the house. It's raining so hard now it no longer sounds like hail, but like a constant barrage of gunfire on the roof. The wind howls like a pack of starving wolves.
Claire picks up the letter by one corner and turns it over, setting it down carefully again.
I'll wait forever if I have to,
she reads aloud.
That must be in reference to the revenge he seeks. This ghost is waiting for you to help him get his vengeance. But there's all this other nonsense about his feelings, says Fiona, gesturing to another letter. What could that mean? Maybe he has a crush on me. I am pretty cute.
Fiona and Claire look at me with identical expressions of doubt. It was a joke, you guys.
Sheesh. This is serious, says Claire disapprovingly. If we can't help the spirit transition to the other side, it will be our fault that he's trapped in limbo forever. Let's give this situation the respect it deserves.
I can't believe I'm getting reprimanded by a medium wearing orthopedic shoes about the proper attitude toward my own haunting, but here we are. You're right. Sorry. I study the letters spread on the table between us and the stack of envelopes off to one side. Why are they all postmarked from prison? Do you think that's a clue too?
It's more likely that the spirit believes he's imprisoned. Metaphorically speaking, he is.
Okay, next question. How the hell can a ghost use a pen?
Spirits can manifest their energy in all sorts of ways, says Claire. Using objects like pens is one of them, but they can also control electrical devices such as telephones and computers.
Or doorbells, Fiona reminds me.
Exactly, agrees Claire. They're remarkably adept at manipulating their environment. If potent enough, they can even affect the weather.
I listen to the storm roaring outside and wonder if Dante has anything to do with that. But if he can control energy and objects, why doesn't he go get his revenge himself? What does he need me for? Couldn't he just drop a piano on his enemy's head?
Well, for one thing, he might not recall who his enemy is.
When I look at her in surprise, Claire says,
being trapped in limbo is terribly confusing. In fact, this ghost of yours most likely doesn't even know he's dead.
I already told her that, says Fiona.
So he needs me to help him remember?
I look at the letters again.
Remind me why I can't just tell him he's dead. It would only drive him further into denial,
answers Claire.
You risk alienating him altogether. If someone told you you were dead, what would your reaction be?
I snort. I'd say, sure, pal, and you're an heirloom tomato.
Precisely. We must gently coax him toward the truth. He has to come to it on his own. It's like the steps a child takes to learn to read. First comes the alphabet, then they learn short, easy words. Cat, dog, tree. Then they put the words together in simple sentences until eventually they're devouring Shakespeare. Comprehension is a multi-step process. It doesn't happen all at once. But how did he even get stuck in limbo in the first place? Why doesn't a soul just automatically move on when the body dies?
Normally they do, but sometimes they lose sight of where to go. The dense reality of the third dimension combined with the gravity of our planet makes things quite complicated for a non-temporal being. Add that to the emotional distress of whatever unfinished business they're suffering from, and you wind up with a very confused and cranky lost spirit.
I exhale hard and mutter,
ghosts are high maintenance.
Fiona chuckles as if that was especially insightful. Indeed. Sitting back in my chair, I cross my arms over my chest and examine the letters again while sifting through everything in my head. So, to recap, what I need to do is coax the spirit into accepting that he's no longer alive and that he needs to go to the other side.
Just so, says Claire, beaming.
How exactly am I supposed to do that if I can't tell him he's dead? She and Fiona share a loaded glance. Then she says softly,
if you give people light, they'll find their own way.
Irritated by her ambiguity, I say sourly, sure, I'll just start shouting go into the light at the ceiling at random intervals. How about that?
Trust your instincts, says Fiona soothingly. You'll think of something. You've got the battle halfway won already just by discovering his identity.
But I don't know anything about him. I only have his name.
I point at his signature on one of the letters, that familiar scrawl, Dante. Fiona and Claire look at each other again in their weird twin telepathy silence. I say flatly, I swear to God, if you guys don't stop doing that, I'll break something.
Why don't you start by researching his name? Suggests Fiona.
After a moment, I admit grudgingly,
That's not a bad idea. I was thinking I'd call my detective friend to get some information about Dante. My laugh is small and weak. That was before I knew he was a ghost, though. Claire repeats,
Detective friend?
The man from the police department who interviewed me after Michael's accident. The overhead lights flicker. We all look up at the ceiling. A low electrical buzzing sound fills the room. Then the lights go out. They come back on within seconds. Claire murmurs,
Yes, you're definitely headed in the right direction there.
I lean in and whisper, Is he just floating around eavesdropping on us? That is so creepy.
Kata, focus.
Seriously, though, why do we even need a seance if this ghost can hear every word we speak? Gazing at me, Fiona muses.
It does seem rather omnipresent, doesn't he?
That's what I'm saying. Claire stares with narrowed eyes at the ceiling. I can almost see the gears turning in her head. Before I can ask her what she's thinking, she says loudly,
Spirit, are you still with us?
Down the hallway, a door slams shut with such force, it sets the open kitchen cabinets gently swinging. I jump and gasp. Fiona murmurs,
Oh my.
Claire grabs Fiona's hand and says urgently,
I think we're close.
Close to what? I ask, confused and alarmed. Claire orders,
Kayla, call that detective.
What, now? It's after 8 o'clock.
Maybe he works late. If not, leave him a message. Do you have a laptop I can borrow?
Well, yes, it's in my office, but...
Without waiting for me to complete the thought, Claire leaps up and hurries from the kitchen. Staring after her, I say,
Fiona, what's going on?
She replies calmly,
I believe Claire thinks we're on the cusp of a breakthrough.
Breakthrough?
In helping the spirit.
I glance warily at the ceiling and the overhead lights, which are now flickering continuously. In a moment, Claire returns carrying my laptop. She sets it on the table in front of me.
Oh,
she says, pulling something from the pocket of her cardigan.
This was sitting on top of the computer lid. I thought it might be significant.
She sets the object down on the table. It's Michael's 1937 D-type Buffalo nickel, the one I found under the tree where the man in the gray trench coat stood staring at me, the one I then found on the dashboard of my car outside Aiden's, the one I left tucked safely inside a drawer. I lose my breath. My heart starts to pound. A savage gust of wind rattles the kitchen windows. Then through the ceiling drops a small metal object that lands with a clatter on the table beside the coin. It spins for a moment before settling into stillness, light glinting off its rounded edge.
It's my wedding ring.
36. I stare wide-eyed at the coin in the ring with my pulse throbbing and a scream trapped inside my chest, knowing that there's something extremely significant here that I'm missing. When I glance up at Claire, she says calmly,
Call the detective.
I whisper,
How did my ring fall through the ceiling?
Call the detective, Kayla. We don't have much time.
What do you mean? What's happening?
Outside, the storm is gathering power. Rain lashes the windows and roof. Thunder booms and lightning crackles. It seems as if the house itself sits in the center of a tornado and is about to be ripped right off the ground and launched into space. From her other pocket, Claire removes my cell phone. She must have picked it up from my desk. She thrusts it at me, insisting,
Make the call!
Panicked, I grab the phone from her hand. Crossing the kitchen, I rummage through the open drawer next to the stove where I keep all the junk. I find the detective's business card and dial his number with shaking fingers. A woman answers, her tone clipped.
Seattle PD, how can I assist you?
Detective Roman Peters, please.
There's a pause, then she says,
Are you a friend of his, ma'am?
What a strange question.
What? No. No, he helped me a while back. My husband was in an accident and he interviewed me and gave me his card. I'd like to speak with him, please. It's urgent.
I glance up to see Claire and Fiona standing beside the kitchen table, encouraging me with smiles and nods. The woman on the other end of the line says,
I'm sorry, but that's impossible.
Why?
Detective Peters passed on.
I'm in such a state of agitation, I don't understand her meaning.
Passed on? You mean he was promoted to another department? No, ma'am, he died. Sudden cardiac arrest. I'll transfer you to the extension of his replacement, Detective Brown. Please hold.
I hear a click, then brief silence.
Then a recording of a man's voice plays, instructing me to leave my number. I disconnect, feeling strangely numb. Fiona prompts,
"Well, what did they say?"
"He's dead. Detective Peters is dead. He died of a heart attack."
"When?"
"She didn't say. Why does it matter?" Shaking her head in impatience, Claire opens the laptop and taps the power button. She pulls up the internet browser and starts to type.
"What are you doing?"
"Looking up the office of the county recorder. We can check the property records for this address to discover who owned the house before you."
She clicks around for a minute, then types into a search bar. Then she stands back, frowning.
"What is it?"
"Was the deed to this property recorded in someone else's name?"
"No, it should be listed as Michael and Kayla Reese." I walk closer and peer over her shoulder at the screen.
"Who the hell are Sandy and David Wainwright? Says they bought this house in January."
Somewhere upstairs, another door slams. I hear the sound of running feet and a child's laughter. My breath catches. Looking upward, I say,
"Wait, the little boy. We're forgetting about him. If Dante's the ghost in this house, who's the kid? And what about the man in the trench coat and hat? How does he fit into all this?"
When I look back at Claire and Fiona, they're wearing identical expressions of sadness, along with another emotion I've seen before. I saw it on Destiny's face, the psychic I visited who wished me safe travels as I was leaving. It's unmistakable. It's pity. Unnerved, I demand,
"Why are you guys looking at me like that?"
Claire says gently,
"It's all right, Kayla. Don't be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of, my dear."
"What is that supposed to mean?"
"Give me the phone, dear."
"Why?"
"I'm going to call the police station again."
"What for?"
"I think there's something you should know."
"Like what?"
"Give me the phone."
An overwhelming feeling of wrongness overtakes me. I back up a step. My blood turns to ice. All the hair on my arms stands on end and I begin to hyperventilate. The storm outside rages. Claire takes the phone from my stiff hand and hits a few buttons. When a familiar woman's voice fills the room, I realize she hit redial, then switched the audio to the speaker.
"Seattle PD, how can I help you?"
"Yes, good evening, ma'am. Will you please tell me when Detective Peters died?"
There's a pause.
Claire explains, "My friend spoke to you a moment ago, and she was so surprised by the news she neglected to ask. She'd like to send flowers to the funeral if it hasn't been held yet."
"Oh, I see. Well, I'm afraid it's much too late for flowers. It's been 6 months since he passed. Almost to the day."
Claire thanks her, then disconnects. Then she and Fiona stand there staring at me with that awful pity in their eyes, waiting. As if from very far away, I hear my own voice. "That's impossible. She's wrong. He interviewed me after the accident. That was only 2 months ago. He sat with me out on the dock and interviewed me." Claire says sadly,
"I have no doubt that he did."
My hands begin to tremble. I find it difficult to draw a full breath. I back up another step. Looking at her for help, I say,
"Fiona?"
She says softly,
"You have to understand, dear, that there are very few people who can communicate with spirits."
My voice rises. "What are you saying? What does that have to do with anything?" She goes on in that calm, soothing tone, ignoring my panic.
"Mediums, of course. A few psychics, too, though most of them are fakes. Also schizophrenics. For reasons we don't really understand, though it probably has something to do with her altered brain chemistry."
Claire adds,
"Cats as well."
"Yes, that's correct. Cats can see ghosts, too."
She pauses.
"So can some gifted children."
The sound of a child's laughter floating down from upstairs makes my heartbeat stutter. It falls to a complete standstill when Claire says,
"And so can other ghosts, though they don't recognize each other as such."
I look back and forth between them.
"I'm sorry. What?"
One of the bulbs in the fluorescent fixture overhead explodes. Another one follows immediately afterward, filling the room with a sharp crackle of shattering glass and the acrid smell of burnt wiring.